Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We are joined by the former longtime major leaguer with the Blue Jays, with the Dodgers, a couple of years with the Mets, now does some pre and post work for the Dodgers out in California, Sean Green. Sean, Joe, and Evan, how are you?
Sean, how are you?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Doing all
excellent.
Right. Doing okay.
Before we talk about your career, and you certainly had a hell of one, hell of a career, what's your sense right now for baseball in 2020? Do you have a good feeling, a bad feeling that we're going to have a baseball season this year?
Yeah, I feel like they're going to figure it out. I mean, it always gets pretty contentious when you when they're negotiating with the owners and the PA, and I think this is a little tricky too, because the collective bargaining agreement is up in a year or two, so they want to make sure they don't set a precedent that's going to cause issues when they negotiate the big deal. So I think there's a lot of nuances to this conversation, but I got to imagine another month or so, the players will be on the field playing actual games.
Sean, how would you feel about playing games without any fans in the stands? What, and I know it's something you haven't done, but I mean, as far as in the major leagues, but how about that?
Well, I was a pretty streaky player, so when I was playing really well, I'd say it sucks. But when I was playing horrible and you don't have to listen to people crushing you all game out in right field, that'd be pretty nice. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. I think it'd be weird, but like anything, you get used to it, I'm sure, and you just kind of adapt. But fans are a huge part of the game, especially when if you're fortunate enough to play in a big market like New York, like L.A., Chicago, those places, Boston. There's just a big difference playing in front of those types of crowds, and the players, especially those players for those teams, are going to really miss them.
What about the aspects of trying to keep the players safe, like the idea of no spitting, the idea of they're going to encourage you not to take a shower at the ballpark, things like that? Do you think some of that would be difficult to cope with as a baseball player, some kind of doing things that you're not used to for the remainder of this season?
Yeah, no, it'll be hard. It'll definitely be hard. But, we're all making sacrifices. I think the shower thing seems a little tough. I mean, I don't know. What do you do if you're I guess they're not going to be flying. I was thinking if it was a getaway day, but they're all probably going to be in one place. But no, it's going to be weird. It's going to be a bizarre thing. But I think, once they get going, they should figure out a really interesting structure and just kind of throw all the rules out in terms of, the history, and everyone in baseball cares so much about, the numbers and different records, because records can be a half season or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just kind of have fun and see what fans enjoy, what kind of modifications.
How about playing in, you mentioned, let's say if everybody's playing at one venue or one area, because who knows if we're going to have, be able to play games in New York. We still don't know that. And there will be states where you will be able to play games, like, Texas, obviously, right now comes to mind. How about that? But being in one area concentrated for the whole time, if it came to that.
Yeah, I think if they could figure out how to keep, players connected with their families and not have to just disappear for several months, I think that would work. And it seems like the biggest challenge, to get games going at this point, because assuming there's going to be no fans, the biggest challenge then becomes, what do you do for travel? And I think it's just something that if everyone's in the same place, I think it makes it a lot easier. It'll be probably a unique experience in that players will get to know guys from other teams, friendships will be built, and you know, there could be some, you know, bad things that stir up if there's brawls in the field and things like, who knows what that leads to. But I think it will be good for the players to kind of have a sense of camaraderie that they're all in this together.
It's obviously very different, but you were a young player in 1994 and you were a star in 2002 where we almost had a strike. 94, we obviously did. What do you remember about kind of the labor disputes? Because it's been a while now for us. Baseball's been, you know, it's had a lot of peace, but 94, 95 is obviously the big one. But even 2002, I remember it was very close to some kind of work stoppage late summer. What do you remember most about that?
Yeah, so I was involved in both of them. I was a call up in 94, and then 95, I was, you know, going into the season, I was on the roster. And then in 2002, I definitely remember being on the bus in Houston, and we just sat on the bus waiting until because it was really close to, like, whether or not a deal was going to get done. And it came down the wire, and then they said, okay, we're good to go, and that was the end of it. But I was a little bit involved in those conversations. In 96, I was a player rep for the Blue Jays, and so I remember when you come through New York and there's a meeting, they encourage players to get involved, and I did that. But yeah, it gets tricky. I mean, without a doubt, it's a very tricky situation, and it's a strong players union. They really protect the players, and that's why they've been able to avoid salary cap and things like that. And that's been it's been very good to be a baseball player, you know, going all the way back to the mid-70s.
You know, to me, they have to get this done, Sean, because it would be such a terrible look if, for both sides, really, if they decide, you know, somehow, because of economics, they're not going to play this season. I mean, how about that aspect of it?
Without a doubt. No, I think it's crucial. That's why I really think they're going to figure out a way to get something done. I mean, everyone's struggling economically and emotionally, everyone wants sports back, and if two sides can't come together over dollars, then you know I think that'll really hurt the game going forward. And I got to think both sides understand that. It's you know these conversations always tend to come down to the wire, and I'm sure in their mind they have a start date. And I think once they start getting close to that, then the two sides will figure out a path forward.
We're talking to Sean Green. You said this earlier about yourself. You were a streaky ball player. And a lot of us think about four home runs in one game because not a lot of guys have done it. You were able to do it. What was going through your mind that day? Because you went 6-for-6. You hit four home runs. I mean, it's as locked in as a human being could be. But take us through that night, especially towards the end. Were you thinking about hitting the fourth home run?
Yeah, no, for sure. So leading up to that game, I was struggling. So after the year before, I had a great year and hit 49 home runs. And going into this part of the season, it was about a quarter of the way through the season. It was late May, and I had three home runs in the season. And then I was getting booed. We played the Mets and the Expos at home. I was 0-for-18, finally broke the 0-for with a double against the Expos. And then we went on the road. I was getting booed. I was happy to be on the road. And the first night in Milwaukee, I had a couple home runs. And the next day I hit a triple, so I was breaking out of it. And then things just sort of clicked, and I squeaked out a double, two strikes, you know, ground ball down the line. And that kind of relaxed me against Glendon Rush, another former Met.
Oh, yeah.
And the next at bat, I kind of knew he was going to throw me in, and I just got enough of it to hit a home run. And then he was out of the game, and a rookie came in, right-handed pitcher, hit the first pitch I saw, slider out, and then I was really relaxed. I was like, geez, I'm really locked in. And I knew as you do better, you kind of know what they're going to throw the next step at. So I knew he'd stay away from me. I hit a ball to the left for a home run. And then I'm trying to hit a home run my fifth at bat. And it was probably the hardest ball I hit. It was a fastball in my shins. I couldn't get in the air, but I hit a base up the middle. And then the manager, Jim Tracy, said, hey, why don't you go shower up? He was just relieved that I was finally, you know, hitting the ball out of the infield, let alone, you know, hitting some home runs. And I said, well, a couple guys get on and I'll have a shot at it. So, you know, leave me in there. And so I stayed in, and sure enough, Adrian Beltre hit a home run and with two outs in the top of the ninth. And I got up there and yeah, I was swinging about as hard as I could and got yeah. a pitch to hit, 1-1 pitch and hit it out.
Crazy.
Wow. That's gotta be something. I mean, that's gotta be an unbelievable feeling. Sean, you run that 06 Met team that came so close, obviously, to get into the World Series. And, you know, we're Met, Evan and I, Met fans, a lot of pain involved in that season the way it ended. How about that? Give us a little feel of what it was playing for the Mets that year.
Oh,
he's gone. I thought maybe I was gone.
No, I think bringing
back
up the
there he is.
All right, we thought bringing up 06 would cause. Yeah.
Did you hear my question, Sean, about the 06 Mets?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
No, I put it on mute because I had my turn signal on. Yeah, so I came in late August. I traded over there, and I had a lot of friends that I had played with before, like Delgado, Laduca, Guillermo Mota. There's a ton of guys, so I was pretty comfortable going over there, and I knew it'd be, you know, kind of a little of a lesser role hitting in the bottom of the lineup or whatever. But I was, you know, at that point, I was just wanted to try to win a championship. And I came over there and there was so much excitement with the young, you know, the young left side of the infield, awesome guys, David Wright, Jose Reyes, and veterans like Beltran. So it was an incredible team. But we just sort of started running out of gas at the end of the season. We had some injuries El Duque, I think, getting hurt in the postseason was a big part you know, that kind of downturn at the end there.
All right. Game two. And I blame Mota for this. I don't blame you. All right. Guillermo Mota just blew up in game two. Spezio hits that fly ball to right field. You make a leaping attempt that would have ended the inning. Take me through not only attempting to make that leaping catch, but then I remember there was like a 5-minute delay because they were debating, is it a home run or not? It wasn't a home run, so the game was only tied, but, you know, so Taguchi would take care of that a few innings later. But take us through that leaping attempt to try to bail Guillermo Mota out in the seventh inning of game two.
Yeah, you could blame me. I still think about that all the time. I should have had it. So what I was doing is sometimes on a ball like that, you don't want to get pinned against the wall. So sometimes if you jump too late, you get stuck and you don't get up high enough.
Right.
So I was trying to jump early and I did, and it just hit the heel of my glove and popped out. But I would say, you know, two out of three or three out of four times at least I catch that ball. So it was one of those things. I mean, Moto's, I played with him several years in LA. He was a great pitcher and had, you know, incredible stuff late in the game. And, you know, it was just, he made a bad pitch. But I should have bailed him out, and that would have been the difference in the series.
Oh, I think so. I mean, if the inning ends there, you know, assuming Billy Wagner doesn't blow it in the ninth inning, and you never know, and you guys go up 2-0 going back to St. Louis, yeah, I think we all feel there isn't a game seven with Beltran coming up with the bases loaded, that you guys win that series and probably win the World Series.
Yeah, I think so. I think a challenge for that team, though, was, you know, our bullpen was awesome. The lineup was awesome. The starting pitching was just running on fumes at that point.
Right.
And I remember, you know, John Main and Oliver Perez came up really big and pitched had some great outings. And then, you know, you have a guy like Tom Glavine who, you know, is going to be solid. You know, he wasn't in his prime and you know, Pedro was also hurt and, you know, the latter part of his career. But you still know, you feel confident that you're going to be in the game with pretty much all the starting pitchers that we had available, and the bullpens, you know, was lights out.
Sean, when Andy Chavez makes the catch in game seven, did you think you guys were going to win that game?
I did. I think just like everyone, you know, your players, but your fans too, like you're watching your teammates do things. And it was incredible. It was just the momentum and all that stuff that came from that was, it felt like we were destined to win that game and win the World Series. So it was a heartbreaker for sure. I mean, you don't get to the point where you're, you know, one swing away from having a chance to get to the World Series and coming up short. And for me, that was my one shot.
Why could you guys not figure out Jeff Suppan? Jeff Suppan looked like a god during that series. What made Jeff Suppan so difficult to hit during game number three and then game number seven?
Yeah, the thing about him is he's better against, I think, a more veteran lineup. And the thing about him is, as a left-hand hitter, he threw backdoor curveballs that you don't really want to hit, that he would just try to, you know, hit the outside corner, and then he'd throw a little cutter in, you know, that's a borderline ball. So you kind of keep you off the curveball by throwing that little cutter in. And he's the type of guy in those key in a key game where everyone's a little bit amped up, that he has the right kind of stuff that you get yourself out, I think. And, you know, there was a couple situations the one time when we had second, third, they walked me to get the force out, and they got Valentin. But it's like that type of at bat. You could see that it wasn't like, you know, guys throwing 95 miles an hour and you know he's going to rear back and throw fastballs. But you kind of camp up and then you get yourself out. And I think that's what happened in some of the key situations.
Sean, you played in L.A., you played in New York. I know you played in Toronto too. But contrast, you know, what it's like playing out in L.A. as opposed to playing in New York.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like New York. I loved L.A. It's home for me, so that was great. And you have great fans, but there's nothing like the atmosphere in a New York stadium. I think it's just different. When you go as a visiting player, I think the Yankees and Mets have an advantage because people go in there and they're intimidated by what's going on in the stands. They're intimidated by, you know, especially at old Yankee Stadium, just knowing all the superstars that played there. It's the best place. It's the best place to play. I had chills in that postseason against the Cardinals. I had chills like for hours, you know, during the game. And at Dodger Stadium, it was awesome, but you can never quite get to that New York level.
Damn right, baby. New York better than L.A. I'm totally with you, even though that's not exactly what you said, but we'll go with it. You mentioned Delgado, played with him with the Mets, played with him with the Blue Jays. We had him on about a month ago now.
Right.
And, you know, it's amazing when you look at his numbers. He's got very close to a Hall of Fame resume, yet wasn't really given a lot of consideration and fell off the ballot immediately. You played with young Delgado in Toronto. You played with veteran Delgado with the Mets. What kind of teammate was Carlos Delgado, and how good was he in your mind?
Carlos was awesome in a lot of ways. I learned a ton from him. I learned how to hit for power playing with him. I learned how to, you know, understand pitchers and what they're trying to do. He's a great guy. He's the smartest guy I played with. And the thing that's also unique about Carlos is that as a Puerto Rican player who speaks great English and connects really well with the American players and is very connected to the Latin players, he's like that bridge. And a lot of teams don't have that type of player that, you know, you go on a lot of teams and you see all the Latin players over in one area kind of hanging out and the Americans in the other area hanging out. And maybe there's like one or two players from Japan or Korea. But with a guy like Delgado, he brings everyone together. And that's something in baseball, I think, that you really need to have that cohesion as a team, is to have, you know, a player like that, that, you know, kind of is the glue for the team. And he was that. And actually, I think the Mets had a couple guys, because like Beltran did a good job of connecting with everyone. As Jose Reyes got older, I think he became that type of player as well.
You know, you played for Willie Randolph, obviously, with the Mets. And to me, and I thought Willie was a pretty good manager. I think he got hosed in a lot of ways when they fired him. And he's never gotten a job again, which to me is unbelievable when you think about it. I mean, are you surprised about that? And what kind of manager was Willie?
Yeah, Willie was great. I mean, he's a really good guy. You know, he understood how to play in New York, and obviously, and he, you know, I think nowadays it's tough. I think to get a job, like he definitely would come off as more of an old school manager, because that's, you know, that's kind of who he is. He's an old school type player, hard nosed.
Right.
And you know, you look at the guys that are getting jobs now. It's guys who are, you know, a lot of guys are willing to be, you know, a puppet to the front office, or they're, you know, really focused on the analytics side, and that's not who he was. And I'm not saying he wouldn't adapt, because, you know, he probably would. But I think when you're looking to hire someone, a lot of general managers and front offices are looking for someone that's become like the new prototypical manager.
Yeah, and one of those guys was one of your teammates, Alex Cora. Was he right, up to shenanigans right back then with the Dodgers, or did he save that for, you know, when he went to Houston or Boston?
No shenanigans. No, I mean, he's like Delgado. He's, if I say, like, another one of the smartest baseball people, he's up there. I mean, he has a really high baseball IQ. He understands. He's like the quarterback, you know, of the infield, whatever team he was playing on. Tremendous defensive second baseman. But yeah, he, you know, as players, you give signs from second. You know, most teams did that. We did that. You look for guys tipping their pitches and seeing those types of things. That's all part of the game. But, you know, as soon as you bring in a third party or technology to relay it, then that's where it gets to be a big issue. And you know, obviously that's what happened.
Who's the one guy, Sean, that you hit well? You got a guy that you hit well that you're not going to offend the guy that you hit if you, you know, somebody maybe you owned?
Well, it's kind of weird. Like, I did better against the better pitchers. I did well against the Braves. So I hit Smoltz really well. I hit Maddux. I actually hit Randy well and Schilling in Arizona. But, like, I'd struggle. We go to Arizona, I hit Randy and Schilling well, but then I'd struggle against their number three, Miguel Bautista. I think he might have been a Met as well.
Yes.
At some point, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. It was. So good call.
Anyone had a good cutter, I had a lot of trouble with. So Rivera was my worst nightmare, for sure.
Yeah, he was everybody's worst nightmare,
right? It seemed. Except for Edgar Martinez.
Yeah, that was the one guy who owned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Sean, we appreciate it. Had a hell of a career, and thank you very much for coming on.
Appreciate it, Sean.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Yeah, stay safe.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.